Chapter 10, The Theory of the Consumption Function. Page 80, Introduction. In the previous chapter, we studied Keynes' consumption function. Economists after Keynes verified his consumption function in a number of empirical studies. Their findings have led to a few new theories or hypotheses of consumption. Before discussing them, we shall first explain Keynes' consumption function theory. Keynes' consumption function, the absolute income hypothesis. Keynes, in his general theory, postulated that aggregate consumption is a function of aggregate current disposable income. The relation between consumption and income is based on his fundamental psychological law of consumption, which states that when income increases, consumption expenditure also increases, but by a smaller amount. The Keynesian consumption function is written as C is equal to A plus CY. A and C are small. A greater than 0 and 0 less than C less than 1. Where small a is the intercept, a constant which measures consumption at a zero level of disposable income. Small c is the marginal propensity to consume, MPC, and capital Y is the disposable income. The above relation that consumption is a function of current disposable income, whether linear or non-linear, is called the absolute income hypothesis. This consumption function has the following properties. 1. As income increases, average propensity to consume, APC, which is equal to C upon Y, falls. 2. The marginal propensity to consume, MPC, is positive but less than unity, that is, 0 is less than C is less than 1. So that higher income leads to higher consumption. 3. The consumption expenditure increases or decreases with increase or decrease in income, but non-proportionally. This non-proportional consumption function implies that in the short run, average and marginal propensities do not coincide. That is, APC is greater than MPC. 4. This consumption function is stable both in the short run and in the long run. This consumption function is explained in figure 1. So in figure 1, we have, like in the earlier figures, a C function and a 45 degrees angle line. Both of these lines intersect at point E0. Corresponding to E0 is Y0 on the income line, which is on the x-axis, and C0 on the consumption line, which is the y-axis. Then there is another point on the x-axis, which is Y1, which is greater than Y0. Corresponding to Y1 on the c-axis, the point is not marked, but corresponding to that point, there is a point C1 on the y-axis such that C1 is greater than C0. Difference between C0 and C1 is delta C. Difference between Y1 and Y0 is delta Y. And capital C is equal to A plus CY. That is the C curve that we were talking about. Returning back to the text. In figure 1, we have C is equal to A plus CY, where A and the second C are small, is a consumption function. At point E on the C curve, the income level is OY1. At this point, APC is greater than MPC, where APC is equal to OC1 upon OY1, and MPC is equal to delta C upon delta Y, which is equal to ER upon RE0. This shows disproportional consumption function. The intercept A shows the level of consumption corresponding to a zero level of income. At income level OY0, where the curve C intersects the 45 degrees line, point E0 represents APC, which is equal to OC0 upon OY0. Below the income level OY0, consumption is more than income. In this range, APC is greater than 1. Above the income level OY0, consumption increases less than proportionately with income, so that APC declines and it is less than 1. Page 81. Empirical studies. Keynes put forward his hypothesis on the basis of knowledge of human nature and detailed facts of experience. His followers, in a number of empirical studies based on cross-section budget figures and short-run time series data in the late 1930s and mid-1940s, confirmed his hypothesis. They found that families with higher income levels consumed more, which confirms that MPC is greater than zero, that is, small c greater than zero, but by less than the increase in income, that is, c is less than 1. They also found that families with higher income levels saved more and so consumed a smaller proportion of income, which confirms that APC falls as income rises. The consumption puzzle. Keynes' assertion that the APC falls as income rises led some Keynesians to formulate the secular stagnation thesis around 1940. According to these economists, as incomes grew in the economy, households would save more and consume less. As a result, aggregate demand would fall short of output. If government spending was not increased at a faster rate than income, the economy would lapse into stagnation. But after World War II, the American economy experienced inflation rather than stagnation, even when the government expenditures were reduced below 1941 level in constant dollars. The Keynesian consumption function had been proved wrong. This was due to the conversion of government bonds into liquid assets after the war by the households in order to meet their pent-up demand for consumer goods. In 1946, Kuznets studied the consumption and income data for the United States during the period 1869 to 1938 and estimated the consumption function for this period as 0.9. Note 1. Kuznets' national product since 1946. Further, he arrived at two conclusions. One, over the long run, on the average, the APC did not show any downward trend, so that the MPC equaled the APC as income increased along a long-run trend. This means that the consumption function is a straight line through the origin, as shown by C1 line in figure 2. So there is figure 2, in which one we have income on the x-axis and consumption on the y-axis. There are two lines. One is line C1, which is at 45 degrees and passing through the origin. It is line CL. The second is CS, which is a normal consumption curve. It is also written over here that APC is equal to MPC is equal to 0.9. Continuing with the text. In the figure 2, the 2 years in which the APC was below the long-run average were boom periods, and the years in which the APC was above the long-run average were the slump periods. This implies that in the short run, as income changes over the business cycle, the MPC is less than the APC, as shown by the CS curve in the figure 2. These findings were later verified by Goldsmith in 1955, who found the long-run consumption function to be stable at 0.87. Note 2, Goldsmith, A Study of Saving in the United States, Volume 1, 1955. Thus, these two studies reveal that for the short-run time series, the consumption function is non-proportional because APC is greater than MPC, and for the long-run time series, the consumption function is proportional, that is, APC is equal to MPC. The failure of the secular stagnation hypothesis and the findings of Kuznets and Goldsmith were a puzzle to the economists, which is known as the consumption puzzle. Figure 2 illustrates this puzzle, where there are two consumption functions. CS is the Keynesian consumption function, which is non-proportional, that is, APC is greater than MPC, and based on short-run time series data. CL is the long-run proportional function, where APC is equal to MPC based on long-run time series data. Over the years, economists have been engaged in solving this puzzle by reconciling the two consumption functions. We study below a few important theories which try to reconcile the two consumption functions. Page 82. The Drift Theory of Consumption. One of the first attempts to reconcile the short-run and long-run consumption functions was by Arthur Smithies and James Tobin. Note 3 and Note 4. Note 3. Arthur Smithies, Forecasting Behavior Demand. 1. Econometrica, January 1945. Note 4. James Tobin, Relative Income, Absolute Income and Saving in Money, Trade and Economic Growth, Essays in Honor of John H. Williams, 1951. They tested Keynes' absolute income hypothesis in separate studies and came to the conclusion that the short-run relationship between consumption and income is non-proportional, but the time series data show the long-run relationship to be proportional. The latter consumption-income behavior results through an upward shift or drift in the short-run non-proportional consumption function due to factors other than income. Smithies and Tobin discuss the following factors. 1. Asset holdings. Tobin introduced asset holdings in the budget studies of Negro and white families to test this hypothesis. He came to the conclusion that the increase in asset holdings of families tended to increase their propensity to consume, thereby leading to an upward shift in their consumption function. 2. New products. Since the end of the Second World War, a variety of new household consumer goods have come into existence at a rapid rate. The introduction of new products tends to shift the consumption function upward. 3. Urbanization. Since the post-war period, there has been an increased tendency towards urbanization. This movement of population from rural to urban areas has tended to shift the consumption function upward because the propensity to consume of the urban wage earners is higher than that of the farm workers. 4. Age distribution. There has been a continuous increase in the percentage of old people in the total population over the long run. Though the old people do not earn, but they do consume commodities. Consequently, the increase in their numbers has tended to shift the consumption function upwards. 5. Decline in saving motive. The growth of social security system, which makes automatic saving and guarantees income during illness. Unemployment, disability and old age has increased the propensity to consume. 6. Consumer credit. The increasing availability and convenience of short-term consumer credit shifts the consumption function upwards. The greater ease of buying consumer goods with credit cards, debit cards, use of ATMs and checks, and availability of installment buying causes an upward shift in the consumption function. 7. Expectation of income increasing. Average real wages of workers have increased and they expect them to rise in the future. These cause an upward shift in the consumption function. Those who expect higher future earnings tend to reduce their savings or even borrow to increase their present consumption. The consumption drift theory is explained in Figure 3. Where CL is the long-run consumption function, which shows the proportional relationship between consumption and income as we move along it. CS1 and CS2 are the short-run consumption functions, which cut the long-run consumption function CL at points A and B. But due to the factors mentioned above, they tend to drift upwards from point A to point B along the CL curve. Each point, such as A and B, on the CL curve represents an average of all the values of factors included in the corresponding short-run functions CS1 and CS2 respectively, and the long-run function CL, connecting all the average values. But the movement along the dotted portion of the short-run consumption functions CS1 and CS2, which cause consumption not to increase in the proportion to the increase in income. So just briefly explaining the figure, as we have mentioned, there are three curves, CL is I think 40 degrees passing through the origin. Then there are two curves, CS1 and CS2, such that CS1 is higher than CS2. Again, here income is on the x-axis, consumption on the y-axis. CS1 and CS2 intersect CL at B and A respectively. So the curve CS1 beyond B is a dotted curve, and the curve CS2 beyond A as we move towards the right on the x-axis is again a dotted curve. Page 83. Its criticisms. The great merit of this theory is that it lays stress on factors other than in income which affect the consumer behavior. In this sense, it represents a major advance in the theory of the consumption function. However, it has its shortcomings. 1. The theory does not tell the rate of upward drift along the CL curve. It appears to be a matter of chance. 2. It is just a coincidence if the factors explained above cause the consumption function to increase proportionately with increase in income, so that the average of the values in the short-run consumption function equals a fixed proportion of income. 3. According to Dusenberry, all the factors mentioned as causes of the upward shift are not likely to have sufficient force to change the consumption savings relationship to such an extent as to cause the drift. 4. Dusenberry also points out that many of the factors, such as declining saving motive, would lead to a secular fall in the consumption function. Such saving plans as life insurance and pension programs tend to increase savings and decrease the consumption function. Moreover, people want more supplementary savings to meet post-retirement needs, which tend to decrease their current consumption. Note, as an alternative to the consumption drift theory, Dusenberry gave his relative income or consumption ratchet hypothesis. Dusenberry was a student of Smithies. The relative income hypothesis. The relative income hypothesis of James Dusenberry. Note 5. James S. Dusenberry, Income, Saving and the Theory of Consumer Behavior, 1949. It is based on the rejection of the two fundamental assumptions of the consumption theory of Keynes. Dusenberry states that 1. Every individual's consumption behavior is not independent but interdependent of the behavior of every other individual, and 2. That consumption relations are irreversible and not reversible in time. In formulating his theory of the consumption function, Dusenberry writes, "A real understanding of the problem of consumer behavior must begin with a full recognition of the social character of consumption patterns." By the social character of consumption patterns, he means the tendency in human beings not only to keep up with the Joneses, but also to surpass the Joneses. Joneses refers to rich neighbors. In other words, the tendency is to strive constantly towards a higher consumption level and to emulate the consumption patterns of one's rich neighbors and associates. Thus, consumers' preferences are interdependent. It is, however, differences in relative incomes that determine the consumption expenditures in a community. A rich person will have a lower APC because he will need a smaller portion of his income to maintain his consumption pattern. On the other hand, a relatively poor man will have a higher APC because he tries to keep up with the consumption standards of his neighbors or associates. This provides the explanation of the constancy of the long-run APC, because lower and higher APCs would balance out in the aggregate. Thus, even if the absolute size of income in a country increases, the APC for the economy as a whole at the higher absolute level of income would be constant. But when income decreases, consumption does not fall in the same proportion because of the ratchet effect. The ratchet effect. The second part of the Dusenberry theory is the past peak of income hypothesis, which explains the short-run fluctuations in the consumption function and refutes the Keynesian assumption that consumption relations are reversible. The hypothesis states that during a period of propensity, consumption will increase and gradually adjust itself to a higher level. Once people reach a particular peak income level and become accustomed to this standard of living, they are not prepared to reduce their consumption pattern during a recession. As income falls, consumption levels decline, but proportionately less than the decrease in income, because the consumer dissaves to sustain consumption. On the other hand, when income increases during the recovery period, consumption rises gradually with a rapid increase in saving. Economists called this the ratchet effect. Page 84. Duzenberry combines his two related hypotheses in the following form. Ct upon yt is equal to a minus small c into yt upon y0, where c and y are the consumption and income respectively. T refers to the current period and the subscript 0 refers to the previous peak. Small a is a constant relating to the positive autonomous consumption and small c is the consumption function. In this equation, the consumption income ratio in the current period, that is Ct upon Yt, is regarded as a function of Yt upon Y0, that is the ratio of the current income to the previous peak income. If this ratio is constant, as in periods of steadily rising income, the current consumption income ratio is constant. During recession, when current income Yt falls below the previous peak income Y0, the current consumption income ratio Ct upon Yt will increase. The relative income hypothesis is explained graphically in figure 4, where Cl is the long-run consumption function and Cs1 and Cs2 are the short-run consumption functions. Suppose income is at the peak level of Oy1, where E1, Y1 is consumption. Now income falls to Oy0. Since people are used to the standard of living at the Oy1 level of income, they will not reduce their consumption to E0, Y0 level, but reduce it as little as possible by reducing their current saving. Thus, they move backward along the Cs1 curve to point C1 and be at C1 Y0 level of consumption. When the period of recovery starts, income rises to the previous peak level of Oy1, but consumption increases slowly from C1 to E1 along the Cs1 curve, because consumers will just restore their previous level of savings. If income continues to increase to Oy2 level, consumers will move upward along the Cl curve from E1 to E2 on the new short-run consumption function Cs2. If another recession occurs at Oy2 level of income, consumption will decline along the Cs2 consumption function towards C2 point and income will be reduced to Oy1 level. But during recovery over the long run, consumption will rise along the steeper Cl path till it reaches the short-run consumption function Cs2. This is because when income increases beyond its present level Oy1, the APC becomes constant over the long run. The short-run consumption function shifts upwards from Cs1 to Cs2, but consumers move along the Cl curve from E1 to E2. But when income falls, consumers move backward from E2 to C2 on the Cs2 curve. These upward and downward movements from C1 and C2 points along the Cl curve give the appearance of a ratchet. This is the ratchet effect. The short-run consumption function ratchets upwards when income increases in the long run, but it does not shift down to the earlier level when income declines. Thus, The ratchet effect will develop whenever there is a cyclical decline or recovery in income. Its criticisms. Although the Duesenberry theory reconciles the apparent contradictions between budget studies and short-term and long-term time series studies, yet it is not without its deficiencies. 1. No proportional increase in consumption. The relative income hypothesis assumes a proportional increase in income and consumption. But increases in income along the full employment level do not always lead to proportional increases in consumption. 2. No direct relation between consumption and income. This hypothesis assumes the relation between consumption and income to be direct, but this has not been borne out by experience. Recessions do not always lead to decline in consumption, as was the case during the recessions of 1948-49 and 74-75. 3. Distribution in income not unchanged. This theory is based on the assumption that the distribution of income remains almost unchanged with the change in the aggregate level of income. If with increases in income, a redistribution occurs towards greater equality, the APC of all persons belonging to the relatively poor and relatively rich families will tend to be reduced. Thus, the consumption function will not shift upward from CS1 to CS2 when income increases. 4. Reversible consumer behavior. According to Michael Evans, the consumer behavior is slowly reversible over time instead of being truly irreversible. Then previous peak income would have less effect on current consumption, the greater the elapsed time from the last peak. Note 6. Michael K. Evans, Macroeconomic Activity, 1969. Even if we know how a consumer spent his previous peak income, it is not possible to know how he would spend it now. Page 85. 5. Neglects other factors. This hypothesis is based on the assumption that changes in consumers' expenditure are related to his previous peak income. The theory is weak in that it neglects other factors that influence consumer spending, such as asset holdings, urbanization, changes in age composition, the appearance of new consumer goods, etc. 6. Consumer preferences do not depend on others. Another unrealistic assumption of the theory is that consumer preferences are interdependent, whereby a consumer's expenditure is related to the consumption patterns of his rich neighbor. But this may not always be true. George Ketona's empirical study has revealed that expectations and attitudes play an important role in consumer spending. Note 7. George Ketona, Psychological Analysis of Economic Behavior, 1963. According to him, income expectations based on levels of aspirations and the attitudes towards asset holdings affect consumer spending behavior more than the demonstration effect. 7. Reverse lightning bolt effect. Smith and Jackson have criticized Duesenberry's empirical evidence that the recovery in income after recession is not caused by ratchet effect. Rather, the consumption experience of consumer is similar to the reverse lightning bolt effect. That is why the consumer gradually increases his consumption due to his inconsistent habit stability with the increase in his income after recession. This is shown in figure 5, where the levels of consumption with the increments in income have been shown by arrows as reverse lightning bolt takes place. So in figure 5, where we have income on the x-axis and consumption on the y-axis, the figure is like a zigzag which is first going up as we go on the right on the x-axis. Then the next phase it moves towards the left, again going up. Then in the next phase again moves to the right, then left, then right, and so on. The permanent income hypothesis. Another solution to the apparent contradiction between the proportional long-run and non-proportional short-run consumption function is Friedman's permanent income hypothesis. Note 8. M. Friedman, A Theory of Consumption Function, 1957. Friedman rejects the use of current income as the determinant of consumption expenditure and instead divides both consumption and income into permanent and transitory components so that Ym or Y is equal to Yp plus Yt. This is equation 1. And C is equal to Cp plus Ct, where P refers to permanent, T refers to transitory, Y to income, and C to consumption. Permanent income is defined as the amount a consumer unit could consume or believes that it could while maintaining its wealth intact. It is the main income of a family unit, which in turn depends on its time horizon and farsightedness. It includes non-human wealth that it owns, the personal attributes of earners in the unit, the attributes of the economic activity of the earners, such as the occupation followed by location of economic activity, and so on. Y being the consumer's measured income or current income, it can be larger or smaller than his permanent income in any period. Such differences between measured and permanent income are due to the transitory component of income Yt. The transitory income may rise or fall with windfall gains or losses and cyclical variations. If the transitory income is positive due to a windfall gain, the measured income will rise above the permanent income. If the transitory income is negative due to theft, the measured income falls below the permanent income. The transitory income can also be zero, in which case measured income equals permanent income. Permanent consumption is defined as the value of the services that it is planned to consume during the period in question. Measured consumption is also divided into permanent consumption, CP, and transitory consumption, CT. Page 86. Measured consumption or current consumption may deviate from or equal permanent consumption depending on whether the transitory consumption is positive, negative, or zero. Permanent consumption, CP, is a multiple, that is K, of permanent income, YP. So CP is equal to K times YP. K is small k, and K is a function of R, W, U, all small. Therefore, CP is equal to K times R, W, U into bracket times YP. This is equation 3. Where K is a function of the rate of interest R, the ratio of property and non-property income to total wealth or national wealth, small w, and the consumer's propensity to consume, small u. This equation tells that over the long period consumption increases in proportion to the change in YP. This is attributable to a constant small k, which is equal to CP upon YP, which is independent of the size of income. Thus, small k is the permanent and average propensity to consume, and APC is equal to MPC. Friedman analyzes the offsetting forces which lead to this result. To take the rate of interest small r, there has been a secular decline in it since the 1920s. This tends to raise the value of small k. But there has been a long-run decline in the ratio of property and non-property income to national wealth, W, which tends to reduce the value of K. The propensity to consume has been influenced by three factors. First, there has been a sharp decline in the farm population, which has tended to increase consumption with urbanization. This has led to increase of K. Second, there has been a sharp decline in the size of families. It has led to increase in saving and reduction in consumption, thereby reducing the value of K. Third, larger provision by the state for social security. This has reduced the need for keeping more in savings. It has increased the tendency to consume more, resulting in the rise in the value of K. The overall effect of these offsetting forces is to raise consumption in proportion to the change in the permanent income component. Therefore, there is a proportional relation between permanent income and consumption. Cp is equal to k times yp. This is equation 4, where k is the coefficient of proportionality in which APC and MPC are endogenous, and it depends upon the above mentioned factors. In other words, it is that proportion of fixed income which is consumed. Now take permanent income, which is based on time series. Friedman believes that permanent income depends partly on current income and partly on previous period's income. This can be measured as YPT is equal to AYT plus within bracket 1 minus A YT minus 1. This is equation 5, where YPT is equal to permanent income in the current period, YT is equal to current income in the current period, YT minus 1 is equal to the previous period's income. A is equal to ratio of change in income between current period T and previous period T minus 1. This equation tells that permanent income is the sum of current period's income YT and previous period's income YT minus 1, and the ratio of income change between the two A. If the current income increases at once, there will be small increase in permanent income. For the permanent income to increase, income will have to be raised continuously for many years. Then only people will think that it has increased. By integrating equations 4 and 5, short-run and long-run consumption function can be explained as Ct is equal to k times ypt, which is equal to k ayt plus k into within bracket 1 minus a yt minus 1, where Ct is equal to the current period consumption, Ka is the short-run MPC, K is equal to long-run MPC, and K into 1 minus A, YT minus 1 is the intercept of short-run consumption function. So that equation was equation 6. According to Friedman, K and Ka are different from one another and K is greater than Ka. Further, K is equal to 1 and Ka is equal to 0. Equation 6 tells that consumption depends both on previous income and current income. Previous income is important for consumption because it helps in forecasting the future income of people. Its assumptions. Given these, Friedman gives a series of assumptions concerning the relationship between permanent and transitory components of income and consumption. 1. There is no correlation between transitory income and permanent income. 2. There is no correlation between permanent and transitory consumption. 3. There is no correlation between transitory consumption and transitory income. 4. Only differences in permanent income affect consumption systematically. And 5. It is assumed that individual estimates of permanent income are based on backward looking of expectations. Page 87. Explanation of the theory. These assumptions give the explanation of the cross-section results of Friedman's theory that the short-run consumption function is linear and non-proportional, that is, APC is greater than MPC, and the long-run consumption function is linear and proportional, that is, APC is equal to MPC. Figure 6 explains the permanent income hypothesis of Friedman, where CL is the long-run consumption function, which represents the long-run proportional relationship between consumption and income of an individual, where APC is equal to MPC. CS is the non-proportional short-run consumption function, where measured income includes both permanent and transitory components. So before we continue with the text, I will explain the figure. So again, we have income and consumption on the x and the y axis. We have CL, which passes through the origin. It is at 45 degrees. There are two other straight lines, CS and CS1, such that CS is lower than CS1. Where CS intersects CL at point E and CL intersects CS1 at point E1. Point E2 is the point on the line EY1 where it intersects CS. y1 and y2 are the incomes corresponding to E and E1. Returning to the text. At OY, income level where CS and CL curves coincide at point E. Permanent income and measured income are identical, and so are permanent and measured consumption, as shown by YE. At point E, the transitory factors are non-existent. If the consumer's income increases to OY1, he will increase his consumption consistent with the rise in his income. For this, he will move along the CS curve to E2, where his measured income in the short run is OY1 and measured consumption is Y1E2. The reason for this movement from E to E2 is that during the short run, the consumer does not expect the rise in income to be permanent. So APC falls as income increases. But if the OY1 income level remains permanent, the consumer will also increase his consumption permanently. Now his short-run consumption function will shift upward from CS to CS1 and intersect the long-run consumption function CL at point E1. Thus, the consumer will consume Y1E1 at OY1 income level. Since he knows that the increase in his income OY1 is permanent, he will adjust his consumption Y1E1 accordingly on the long-run consumption function CL at E1, where APC is equal to MPC. Its criticisms. This theory has been criticized on the following counts. 1. Correlation between temporary income and consumption. Friedman's assumption that there is no correlation between transitory components of consumption and income is unrealistic. This assumption implies that with the increase or decrease in the measured income of the household, there is neither any increase or decrease in his consumption, because he either saves or dissaves accordingly. But this is contrary to actual consumer behavior. A person who has a windfall gain does not deposit the entire amount in his bank account, but enjoys the part or whole of it on his current consumption. Similarly, a person who has lost his purse would definitely cut or postpone his present consumption rather than rush to the bank to withdraw the same amount of money to meet his requirements. 2. APC of all income groups not equal. Friedman's hypothesis states that the APC of all families, whether rich or poor, is the same in the long run. But this is against the ordinary observed behavior of households. It is an established fact that low-income families do not have the capacities to save the same fraction of their incomes as high-income families. This is not only due to their meager incomes, but their tendency to prefer present consumption to future consumption in order to meet their unfulfilled wants. Therefore, the consumption of low-income families is higher relative to their incomes, while the saving of high-income families is higher relative to their incomes. Even in the case of persons at the same level of permanent income, the level of saving differs, and so does consumption. 3. Use of various terms confusing. Friedman's use of the terms permanent, transitory, and measured have tended to confuse the theory. The concept of measured income improperly mixes together permanent and transitory income on the one hand and permanent and transitory consumption on the other. Page 88. 4. No distinction between human and non-human wealth. Another weakness of the permanent income hypothesis is that Friedman does not make any distinction between human and non-human wealth and includes income from both in a single term in the empirical analysis of his theory. 5. Expectations not backward-looking. Estimates of permanent income are based on forward-looking expectations and not on backward-looking expectations. In fact, expectations are rational because change in consumption are due to anticipated changes in income that lead to changes in permanent income. Conclusion. Despite these weaknesses, it can be fairly said, according to Michael Evans, that the evidence supports this theory and that Friedman's formulation has reshaped and redirected much of the research of the consumption function. Note 9. M. K. Evans, opposite, page 34, italics added. The Life Cycle Hypothesis. Andu and Modigliani. Note 10. A. Andu and F. Modigliani. The Life Cycle Hypothesis of Saving. Aggregate Implications and Tests. AER, March 1963. So Andu and Modigliani have formulated a consumption function which is known as the Life Cycle Hypothesis. This is also known as the Wealth Theory of Consumption. According to this hypothesis, consumption is a function of lifetime expected income of the consumer. The consumption of the individual consumer depends on the resources available to him, the rate of return on capital, the spending plan, and the age at which the plan is made. The present value of his resources includes income from assets or wealth or property and from current and expected labor income. Thus, his total resources consist of his income and wealth. Its assumptions. The life cycle hypothesis is based on the following assumptions. 1. There is no change in the price level during the life of the consumer. 2. The rate of interest paid on assets is zero. 3. The consumer does not inherit any assets and his net assets are the result of his own savings. 4. His current savings result in future consumption. 5. He intends to consume his total lifetime earnings plus current assets. 6. He does not plan any bequests. 7. There is certainty about his present and future flow of income. 8. The consumer has a definite conscious vision of life expectancy. 9. He is aware of the future emergencies, opportunities and social pressures which will impinge upon his consumption spending. And 10. The consumer is rational. Its explanation. Given these assumptions, the aim of the consumer is to maximize his utility over his lifetime, which will in turn depend on the total resources available to him during his lifetime. Given the lifespan of an individual, his consumption is proportional to these resources. But the proportion of resources that the consumer plans to spend will depend on whether the spending plan is formulated during the early or latter years of his life. As a rule, an individual's average income is relatively low at the beginning of his life and also at the end of his life. This is because in the early years of his life, he has little assets or wealth, and during the late years, his labor income is low. It is, however, in the middle of his life that his income, both from assets and labor, is high. As a result, the consumption level of the individual throughout his life is somewhat constant or slightly increasing, as shown with figure 7 in the curve CC1. The Y0-Y1 curve shows the individual consumer's income stream during his lifetime T. During the early period of his life, represented by T1 in the figure, he borrows or disaves CY0B amount of money to keep his consumption level CB, which is almost constant. So before we proceed, let us try to understand figure 7. So we have time on the x-axis and consumption on the y-axis. CC1 is a straight line inclining upwards, where C is a certain point on the y-axis. Then we have another curve, Y0, YY1. Y0 is less than C. So this is a rising curve up to the point Y. After point Y, it starts going down as we proceed on towards the right of the time axis. The point where Y0, YT curve intersects CC1, so it intersects at two points. The first one is at point B, which corresponds to time T1. The second is at point S, that is in the falling curve, which is at time T2, such that T2 is greater than T1. And also, there is a third time T, which is greater than T2. So the area between the two curves that is covered by BYS, that is indicated as the saving, The area covered between Y0 CB is dis-saving, and similarly, the area covered between Y1 CS is also dis-saving. We will return to the text on the next page. Page 89. In the middle years of his life, represented by T1 T2, he saves BSY amount to repay his debt and for the future. In the last years of his life, represented by T2T, he dissaves SC1Y1 amount. According to this theory, consumption is a function of lifetime expected income of the consumer, which depends on his resources. In some resources, his current income YT, present value of his future expected labor income YELT, and the present value of assets AT are included. So in YELT, E is the superscript and LT is the subscript. The consumption function can be expressed as CT is a function of VT. This is equation 1, where VT is equal to total resources at time T. And VT is the function of YT plus YELT plus AT. This is equation 2. By substituting equation 2 in equation 1 and making 2 linear and weighted average of different income groups, the aggregate consumption function is CT, which is equal to alpha 1 YT plus alpha 2 YEL plus alpha 3 AT. This is equation 3, where alpha 1 is equal to MPC of current income, alpha 2 is equal to MPC of expected labor income, and alpha 3 is equal to MPC of assets or wealth. Now APC is equal to C1Y1 alpha 1 plus alpha 2 into YEL divided by YT plus alpha 3 into AT upon YT. APC is constant in the long run because a portion of labor income is current income, and the ratio of total assets to current income are constant when the economy grows. On the basis of the life cycle hypothesis, Ando and Modigliani made a number of studies in order to formulate the short-run and long-run consumption functions. A cross-section study revealed that more persons in the low-income groups were at low-income level because they were at the end period of their lives. Thus, their APC was high. On the other hand, more than average persons belonging to the high income groups were at high income levels because they were in middle years of their lives. Thus, their APC was relatively low. On the whole, the APC was falling as income rose, thereby showing APC greater than MPC. The observed data for the US revealed the APC to be constant at 0.7 over the long run. The Ando-Modigliani short-run consumption function is shown by the CS curve in figure 8. So in figure 8, we have the CL straight line, which is passing through the origin and it has 45 degrees. Then the CS curve, which is the normal CS curve, it hits the y-axis, that is the consumption axis, at alpha W. And there is another curve, CS1, which is higher than CS, and it touches the y-axis at alpha W1. So going back to the text, at any given point of time, the CS curve can be considered as a constant, and during short-run income fluctuation, when wealth remains fairly constant, it looks like the Keynesian consumption function. But its intercept will change as a result of accumulation of wealth or assets through savings. As wealth increases over time, the non-proportional short-run consumption function, CS, shifts upwards to CS1. To trace out the long-run proportional consumption function, the long-run consumption function is CL, showing a constant APC as income grows along the trend. It is a straight line passing through the origin. The APC is constant over time because the share of labor income in total income and the ratio of wealth, that is assets, to total income are constant as the economy grows along the trend. Its implications. 1. The life cycle hypothesis solves the consumption puzzle. According to this hypothesis, the short-run consumption function would be non-proportional, as in the short-run time series estimates. its intercept, alpha w in figure 8, measures the effect of wealth, and the life cycle consumption function looks like the Keynesian consumption function as Cs in the figure. But it holds only in the short run when wealth is constant. As wealth grows, alpha w1, this consumption function shifts upwards as Cs1. The shifting of the Cs to Cs1 traces out the long-run consumption function Cl. This is consistent with the evidence from long-run time series data that the long-run consumption function is proportional. The slope of the Cl curve shows that the average propensity to consume does not fall as income increases. In this way, Otto Modigliani solved the consumption puzzle. Page 90. 2. The life cycle hypothesis reveals that savings change over the lifetime of a consumer. If a consumer starts his life in adulthood with no wealth, he will save and accumulate wealth during his working years. But during retirement, he will dissave and run down his wealth. Thus, the life cycle hypothesis implies that the consumer wants smooth and uninterrupted consumption over his lifetime. During working years, he saves, and when retires, he dissaves. 3. The life cycle hypothesis also implies that a high-income family consumes a smaller proportion of his income than a low-income family. In its peak earning years, shown as portion BSY in figure 7, its income is more than its consumption and its APC is the lowest. But in the case of a low-income family and a retiree family, the APC is high. Its criticisms. The life cycle hypothesis is not free from certain criticisms. 1. Plan for lifetime consumption unrealistic. The contention of Otto Modigliani that a consumer plans his consumption over his lifetime is unrealistic because a consumer concentrates more on the present rather than on the future, which is uncertain. 2. Consumption not directly related to assets. The life cycle hypothesis presupposes that consumption is directly related to the assets of an individual. As assets increase, his consumption increases and vice versa. This is also unwarranted because an individual may reduce his consumption to have larger assets. 3. Consumption depends on attitude. Consumption depends upon one's attitude towards life. Given the same income and assets, one person may consume more than the other. 4. Consumer not rational and knowledgeable. This hypothesis assumes that the consumer is rational and has full knowledge about his income and future lifetime. This is unrealistic because no consumer is fully rational and knowledgeable. 5. Estimation of variables not possible. This theory depends on many variables such as current income, value of assets, future expected labor income, etc. The estimation of so many variables is very difficult and not possible. 6. Liquidity constraints. This hypothesis fails to recognize the existence of liquidity constraints for a consumer. Even if he possesses a definite and conscious vision of future income, he may have little opportunity for borrowing in the capital market on the basis of expected future income. As a result, consumption may respond more to changes in current income than predicted on the basis of life cycle hypothesis. 7. Neglects locked-up savings. This theory neglects the role of locked-up savings in consumption. It regards savings as a pool from which people spend on consumption over their lifetime. In fact, people keep their savings in locked-up form in mutual funds, pension plans, life insurance, etc. Conclusion. Despite these, the life cycle hypothesis is superior to other hypotheses on consumption function because it includes not only wealth as a variable in the consumption function, but also explains why APC is greater than MPC in the short run and APC is constant in the long run. Exercises. 1. What differences are generally noticed between the short-run and long-run behavior of the consumption function? How do you explain these differences? 2. Explain Keynes' absolute income hypothesis. Discuss the evidences that support and that do not support his hypothesis. 3. Explain fully the consumption puzzle. 4. What is the relative income hypothesis for explaining aggregate consumption behavior? Is it an improvement on the absolute income hypothesis? 5. Discuss critically Friedman's permanent income hypothesis for consumption. 6. Examine critically the life cycle consumption hypothesis. 7. Discuss the drift theory of consumption. With this, we come to the end of chapter 10.